I fumbled some opportunities, you know, in college, but I always knew that I could bounce back and like, and just know that you're your own CEO. Even if you work a 9-to-5, you're your own CEO. You could be in control of your own destiny. And I knew like, okay, if I could just get a job, a good job somewhere, I could work my way up. And then I could make some moves and make, you know, more money. And you know, I'm blessed to say that, you know, I've been able to do that. But I realized, okay, Lance, this might be your niche. You could be that black dude and make a lane for yourself in revenue cycle management.
Welcome back to the Working While Black Show. I'm your host, Walter Gaynor II, and this is your go-to resource for career growth and entrepreneurship. In today's episode, we're exploring a billion-dollar industry that's basically hidden in the healthcare field. It's called revenue cycle management. Now, outside of handling money, I'm not gonna lie, I had no idea what this was. So I called my cousin Lance, who basically had the biggest comeback ever, going from being put on a performance improvement plan early in his career to becoming one of the most influential people at his organization. If you're trying to figure out how to move up at your company or just pivot to a whole new industry, then listen closely because our guest, Lance Gaynor, who's a revenue cycle expert, he came through to break down the entire industry and give us like over 10 different ways to take ownership over your career. So listen closely because we're getting started right now. So yeah, man, I feel like in right now at your journey, like it was cool talking to you the other day because feels like you're just getting started for real. So I want to go back through your journey and just to learn about the growing pains that got you to be that healthcare finance leader that you are today. Cause we always talk about the big wins, like the flashy moments, which is good. But I think like the real gems, the real lessons that we could all learn from and relate to are in those growing pains, those uncomfortable moments. But before we just jump into all of that, I want to ask you, what is one cheat code that has helped you to continue to grow throughout your career?
Yeah, I don't know if there are any cheat codes in life, you know, to be honest, but, you know, I understand the question. What I would say is for me is just kind of being open-minded, right? And thinking outside the box, right? You know, a lot of people are conditioned to go to college, you know, find a good job, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, the environment's always changing, right? You know, such as yourself, you're doing podcasts. This wasn't, you know, available years ago, right? So you always have to be open-minded. You got to be flexible. You know, there's always some new opportunity out there. So I would say kind of just being open-minded. That's what's kind of, you know, led me to where I am now. Just kind of thinking outside the box, you know, doing some, you know, critical thinking that other people may not have been thinking about, or just kind of being ahead of the game, you know?
And so with that open-mindedness, I feel like that's a good one, actually. I really like that a lot. And I think that's easier said than done oftentimes, especially like when it comes to change. It's almost like it's human nature almost to be a little resistant to it. It might even be like some like survival instinct. I'm not sure. But like, what is it about you when you're kind of in these positions where you're thinking back to a moment where your open-mindedness allowed you to move differently or kind of take advantage of something? Like, what is your kind of mindset when kind of confronted with something that may not be traditional or normal? Like, how do you be open-minded?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna step back a little bit. I don't know if these may be other questions. I may be divulging some answers to other questions, but I'm gonna step back to my college trajectory, actually. You know, just coming out of high school, you know, I had a lot of opportunity. You know, I was accepted to NC State, which is a PWI, predominantly white institution. But my mother pushed HBCU. She wanted me to have that black experience. So I actually went to North Carolina A&T State University, Aggie Pride. And I actually was on an Army ROTC scholarship. As you know, our family has a lot of military, we have a military-friendly family, you know. So that kind of interested me. But then I also was on the football team. I was a preferred walk-on on the football team, and I was a mechanical engineering major. So I was probably the only person on campus trying to take on that load. So, you know, just think about it. Just coming into college, I was doing a lot of different things. I was, you know, on a football team that had just won the MEAC championship. I was in ROTC taking military science classes. I was an engineering major. So I've always had just a, you know, a diverse, you know, mindset. So I was dealing with a lot of different people. So in long story short, I went through a lot of ups and downs. Like it was a heavy load, just to be honest. It overwhelmed me. But I stuck through it, and I made a lot of changes. I didn't follow through with some of those things. And I ended up with a degree in English. So again, open-minded, right? That's a big differential from going from engineering to English. So when I came out of college, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And my mom was always a great advisor. And she kind of triggered the open-mindedness. She said, think about healthcare, medical billing and coding. And I said, I kind of scoffed. I laughed. I said, Mom, what are you talking about? But then she was able to kind of give me a little bit more context and said, Lance, you have a well-rounded personality, or you're well-rounded, you know, hence I did all of these different things. My undergrad transcript is definitely confusing. so many things up there from calculus to physics to modern poetry to Shakespeare to military science. So my undergrad transcript has so much, but she was like, Lance, healthcare may be where you need to go. The business side of healthcare. So she was the one that sparked my interest in healthcare, the business side. So, you know, by taking her advice, I took a class in medical billing and coding, and that's really what started my whole trajectory in the business side of healthcare. And then from there, I just started making, you know, more and more moves. And years later, I remember thanking my mom, and she said, Lance, I gave you the idea, but you took it where you've taken it. So, you know, that's and beautiful. I appreciated that. But, you know, so once I took an entry level job at LabCorp, and I wasn't really making much money. I remember the HR person lady telling me, like, Lance, she was trying to offer me a position in the call center. And when I graduated, you know, I want to let you know, when I first graduated college, my job was just working at a call center, which is a job that you could get without a college degree. So when I got on that LabCorp, the HR representative that I met, she told me that the call center job at LabCorp paid more than another position. And I said, look, I can't work in another call center. You know, I'm kind of burnt out with this. And she said, well, this other position pays less. And I remember telling her, I said, look, I'll take that position that pays less because I believe in myself and I know that I could, you know, I'll make it happen eventually. So that's kind of like the background of, you know, I took some chances, but I bet on myself. And, you know, now, you know, I'm a consultant for a healthcare organization and I go to different hospitals and health systems to help them with their finances. So it's an interesting trajectory for me.
That's really cool. I can see how that works, because I think it's very easy to just take the job with more money than the lower one, but it's something that you are not going to hate every day. Be like, man, why am I here? That's cool. I want to go back a little bit back to college, because I didn't realize just how much you were doing. And you know what's also funny? I remember actually growing up, and I remember actually... There were some pictures on, I don't know what colors your high school team or your college team was. There's pictures of you playing football, and you wore, it was like green and yellow, I want to say.
Got a good memory, and, man. We were green and gold. Yeah, you got a great memory. Well,
you know why I remember that? It's because I was like, hold up, Lance plays for the Packers? I was like real young, and I was like, what?
I wish.
What?
I wish I made it that far.
Man, that's cool. Okay, so college, did you play throughout your whole college experience?
I actually didn't. I'm going to be honest. You know, that's where things get kind of tricky in my undergrad. And, you know, you got to learn to live with some regret. But honestly, just to be transparent, you know, it was tough to kind of manage being an ROTC and on a football team. And as well as being an engineer, you know, that's a heavy load, right? Just imagine. So, and then, you know, I'm from a small town, you know, and I, you know, going to a bigger city, you know, being on a football team where you get attention and, you know, you, I was a young man. I was interested in women. So it was just a lot going on. So it was just a lot to balance. So I found myself in a position where I had to make a decision to, because the colonel at the time, he was a great man, great leader, but he didn't really take well to people in ROTC doing extracurricular activities that would take away from being in ROTC. So they were always kind of, questioning me playing football as well. So, and my friend, and then freshman year on the football team, the coach at the time, he didn't really believe in like playing freshmen. So I was basically like just on the sideline for the home games, but I practiced throughout the year. And then in springtime, that's when you really trying to make the team and they make cuts. I actually didn't get cut, but unfortunately, I made a decision to quit so that I could kind of focus on ROTC to pacify the colonel. And then a year later after that, I made a decision to get out of ROTC. But technically, and that's one of my regrets in life because I didn't get cut. I had friends that just didn't make it, after their spring evaluation. Me, I had moved up on the depth chart, so there's a high likelihood that I would have gotten playing time that next year. So that's just one of those things that I've always regretted because I know I had some potential in football, but because I, committed to ROTC at the time, I just had to make that decision to pacify the colonel and because they were actually paying for some of my school at the time. So I wanted to make sure that I took advantage of that at the time. So it's that's just my life right there. That's one of those decisions I made. And I just got to live with it, knowing that, man, sometimes I think like, man, if I would have just got cut, I would have had an excuse like, yeah, I just got cut, but I actually didn't get cut. I actually could have come back, but I just had that ROTC commitment over my head.
Hey man, I think something that looking back, I'd say definitely underestimated just like time in general at school. Like I ended up kind of resigning from playing soccer on my college team just because like one, I don't really like the. I ended up going to this new school, so the one lost accreditation, and I didn't really like the coach all that much. It just felt like I had to beg to play. I wasn't one of on his like top favorite list. There's a lot of great players on the team, so there's never
Yeah, I remember
questioning like who
you're the
was
soccer
starting.
man, man. You're the soccer guy. I remember that.
Got a little stock of money to go, but yeah. Then I've learned that because how I got to this new school, my scholarship wasn't dependent on me being on the team, and I didn't like the system that they had there for the team anyways, wasn't playing. So I was like, let me step back. And after that, I definitely enjoyed the rest of my college experience. And my grades were good too. They were better. Well, so yeah. I think sometimes like there's a lot of like decisions we have to make, and it's like it's like you didn't make a bad decision, but it's like, man, what if type of thing. What if
I
type of
mean,
thing.
I'll be
So
honest. I think I did make some. I made some, but that'd be a good segue into, why my favorite word is resilience, right? As you
Oh, let's
see,
talk about it.
yeah, you'll see that, so my, and it's ironically, my ended up getting a degree in English. I just got to a point where I was just trying not to flounder out of school and not be a disappointment. So, and I went through some other things. I went through some, I had an incident where I had a friend that got murdered in college. I'm not, rest in peace to Chris Harmon. So that was a challenging time too. So I got to a point where I just changed my major to English and it was like, look, I'm gonna just get a degree. And it was kind of therapeutic, to be honest, because in engineering, it's a competitive, discipline, right? There's a lot of smart people in that, and it's tough. I wasn't doing bad, but I just hit a point where I just was in a place mentally where I just made a random decision to change my major to English, and it was kind of therapeutic at the time because of what I was dealing with, and the people that were in that major, a lot of them, they were wanting to be teachers or lawyers, so they were good people, and doing the reading was good for me. And then, I've always been a decent communicator, so it worked out. And I got a degree in English, but so I always have an affinity for words. And coming out of college, resilience was just that just became my word. I just love resilience because I think if you think about it, in life we're always trying to grow. We're not going to be perfect. You look at a lot of religions, there's a component of resilience in a lot of religions, right? Jesus, he died and came back, right? That's resilience ultimately, right? Buddhism, right? Reincarnation, the phoenix rising from the ashes. There's so many stories of resilience. So coming out of college, I knew I squandered some opportunities, but I knew that I was still that guy. I was still that guy that was that could have been a second lieutenant. I was still that guy that could have been a strong safety for the Packers, maybe. So I always had that inner confidence, even though I had kind of, pun on words, but a play on words, fumbled. I fumbled some opportunities, in college, but I always knew that I could bounce back in life. So resilience was my word. And I knew, like, okay, if I could just get a job, a good job somewhere, I could work my way up, and then I could make some moves and make, more money, and I'm blessed to say that, I've been able to do that. But I know I'm realistic. I know I'm still going to hit hurdles at times, so I always got that mindset. Just be resilient, Lance. Whatever comes your way, you may have some ups, you may have some downs, but just keep going and keep bouncing back.
Would you say you feel like you've definitely bounced back?
I'm gonna be honest. I mean, I'm going through some, I'm in a current role where it's pretty challenging, but yeah, I mean, I've bounced back, I mean, and when I look at it from a salary perspective, yeah, I've definitely, when I look back at my first job at LabCorp, what I was making, I went from like an hourly, I think I was making maybe $11 an hour to now, definitely I've been making above six figures for several years. Yeah, I've definitely bounced back.
Nice. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the world that you're in now, healthcare management and healthcare finance. That's a world I know nothing about. I feel like I probably know like you and two other people who are in that world. Actually, no, maybe one other person who's in that world. How much did you know about it before getting that job at LabCorp?
Well, like I said, my mom threw out the idea. She said medical billing and coding, and like I said, I was like you. I was like, "What? What's that?" So once I took her advice, there was like a local school. It was like a little vocational school called Tech Skills, and I reached out to them, and they had like this 1 year program where you kind of learn the ins and outs of medical billing and coding. So I went to that school. I was working at the call center, and I was going there after work, and I finished the program. And then they had like this little career fair, and they had a lady from LabCorp, HR there, and that's when I met her. And she said, that's when we had a conversation about the call center. I said, I don't want to work in a call center. She said, okay, well, I have this job in denials. And I said, she said, it's, you're not going to be on the phone, but it pays a little bit less. I said, okay, I'll take that because I just can't be in a call center. It's not going to work. I'll do the denials. So I got the job at LabCorp, and it was really an entry level position. So ultimately, the business side of healthcare, what they call revenue cycle. So it's billing operations, but there's a formal term. It's called revenue cycle management. So the point that you go to a doctor's office and you get scheduled and you get registered to the point where your claim goes through to the insurance and you make your payment. That's all of those processes. Those are considered, that's considered revenue cycle management. So when I got to LabCorp, that's when I really started getting exposed to the business side of like healthcare. So whenever you go to get lab testing, that doctor's office may send that over to LabCorp. They perform the testing, send back the results. But then there's a process of billing the insurance, right? Or you may have to make a payment. So it's a real complex system and industry, and it's one that you can't go to college and say, I want to major in revenue cycle, right? And so when I worked at LabCorp, I realized, okay, Lance, this might be your niche, right? You could be that black dude and make a lane for yourself in revenue cycle management. So the light bulb came on, and I'm gonna be honest, like I said, resilience. This is another story. When I first worked at LabCorp, it was all new, and I was still kind of younger. I almost got fired in my first role because my production wasn't great. And I got on a performance improvement plan, and it humbled me. But there was another young gentleman that came on at the same time as me, and he was on it too. We were on it together because, honestly, we were just comparing our numbers to each other, right? Because we were like, hey, what was your percentage? He was like, yeah, like 70. I'm like, yeah, mine was like 71. And so we're leaving thinking, okay, we're good. Then maybe a few weeks later, I'm like, oh, man, did you have a meeting with the manager? Like, yeah. He's like, man, I got to keep this job. So I'm like, okay. I was like, look, man, I'm going to figure this out. And he was like, man, whatever you do, let me know. I was like, I got you. So, you know, I started working overtime. You know, I started, like, talking to people that were performing well, you know, getting tips from them. And then eventually we got off the performance improvement plan. And then I ended up becoming one of the top performers in the group. So there's another example of resilience. I literally almost got fired in my first job at LabCorp. But I was so determined, like, I came in for a reason. I went through, like, I made a decision to take courses. Like, I can't let this slip away. So I was able to bounce back. They had a culture from promoting from within. That's one thing I will say that was, advantageous of being there at the time is that the culture at the time, they wanted to promote from within. They had these leadership programs. I ended up getting selected in one of those where I had a mentor, really great guy, really respected ex-Marine. So he was my mentor. He was a associate VP of cash applications. So I really did a lot while I was working there. I grew a lot professionally, and I got promoted a couple times. There were times where I did speaking engagements in front of the company. I worked there 7 years, and before I left, you know, I think it's safe to say that I was kind of well known at the organization. You know, I did a lot. You know, I even hosted like some all company or rep all company business meetings. So I did a lot while I was there. And then I just started thinking like, and this where thinking outside the box, I got to a point where I felt like I was hitting a ceiling and I was like, okay, what's next? And that's when I started researching LinkedIn. I know that might have been something you wanted to get into, but LinkedIn was a absolutely big tool for me.
Well, before we get into that, let me ask you one question about when you're in that, when you were in that improvement plan, you said you were speaking to people who were doing well, to ask them like just for some advice. Do you remember maybe what was like one of the most, the best advice that you got for some of those people who were performing well?
I think one of the biggest thing was just, you know, learning what tools to use. That's when I really got introduced to Microsoft Excel, because some of the work that we got, that we received, came through like Excel spreadsheets. And at the time, I hadn't really been exposed to Excel. So there was a young lady that I knew was really good at Excel. So I would start setting up some time like, hey, can you teach me some tricks in Excel so that I could format my spreadsheet, I could do some sorting. So that's one of the things, is just kind of, you know, increasing my technical aptitude in Excel, because now I would consider myself an expert. You know, years later, I'm an expert in Excel. But that was my first foray into it, and that was actually one of the tools that helped me and my colleague improve, is just formatting our spreadsheet. There were some other tools that were that they used as well that she taught me how to use. So, but Excel, as well as some of the legacy proprietary tools that LabCorp had, she helped me kind of figure out, you know, the best method to use them and format my work every day so that I could work more efficiently.
Okay. I'm coming that like a product specialist, and those tools helped you to just perform better. That's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think that lady's role at the time, I think the title was Project Specialist.
Oh, wow.
Yep, that was her title, was Project Specialist. Like, and I'm like, yeah, that group over there, they're like real savvy. So let me tap into them.
Okay. All right, cool. That's a good tip. I could probably brush up on some of my Excel stuff too. There's one time I ended up having to learn very quickly how to do some complex, complex for me, it was a VLOOKUP formula. And I'll never forget it, because it was just like, I had to get it absolutely right, because we're dealing with like tons of like inventory management.
That's one of
data.
My first formulas, man. The VLOOKUP is one of my faves. I've done that. I've taught people how to do that plenty of times. But yeah, okay. it's funny you said that.
When you're ready for when you're ready for the Excel masterclass, you know, let me know. I'm gonna slide in as a student and relearn that.
It's always run into somebody that's better than me, but it's a million things you can learn. But I'm okay.
That's how it always works. Always someone better. But yeah, speaking of tools, let's talk about LinkedIn. You were already going there. Love it. LinkedIn is a platform that people know technically what it is, but don't always know what it can be used for or what's really going on LinkedIn. And you're someone, I remember we were speaking, you said that you it actually helped you to find some opportunities. So can you tell us about like what brought you to LinkedIn and how you've used it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been intrigued with social media in general. I think I probably had Facebook back when you had to be a student. You had to have a college email. So, you know, I was on Facebook when it first started. So when LinkedIn came about, I was intrigued by that. So I think I was probably one of the first people on the platform just because I'm always an early adopter with certain. Well, I was an early adopter. Now, so many coming out, you know, it's hard to keep up. But I was on LinkedIn early. And, you know, like I said, I was at LabCorp. I got a couple promotions. I was starting to become more ambitious. But I got to a level where any promotion opportunities were going to be few and far between because there were already people in certain positions. So I was like, man, I want to still grow, but maybe it's time for me to find a place outside of LabCorp. So, and this is an interesting story, right? So I went through a spell where I was like, Lance, you're wasting your time on Facebook and Instagram. Like, you need to do a fast on Facebook. So but anytime I would try to just get off it and be disciplined, it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I would always just go back to it. So I went home one weekend and I said, Mom, I said, I'm trying to get off of Facebook, but you know, I'm having a tough time. So I'm going to change my password. I'm going to ask you to type in a password, but don't tell me. Don't tell me what it is. So she was like, you sure? I said, yes. I was like, at some point I'm going to call you and ask you for it, but I'm trying to wean myself off it. So we did that. And I devoted my attention to LinkedIn. I read an article that said, you know, LinkedIn is going to be the way to, you know, create a network and opportunities. But it also had like certain steps. You want to create a good profile, have a good profile picture. This was another piece. It said, have at least 500 connections. You know, so I started sending requests to all types of people. People that I didn't really know, people that just had interesting profiles, because it said if you have 500 plus connections, you're going to seem as a powerful person, right? Mm. You know, we live in a world of perception. So that article led me to, you know, get 500 plus connections easily. Most people will accept it, especially if your profile looks pretty legit. I started making sure I put all of my my work experience, my education. So I just made sure I polished up LinkedIn. And then from there, I started researching companies that I wanted to work for. And I started looking at those people's profiles. So I narrowed down a company called Optum. They're a division of United Health Group. Everybody's heard of United Healthcare. United Health Group is the parent company. They started a division called Optum that does a lot of technology. They do consulting. They even get into pharmacy. It's a huge revenue generating arm of United Health Group. So and when I was working at LabCorp, I was exposed to Optum a little bit. So I said, I want to work for them. So let me find some people profile that work for Optum. And I actually found the lady that posted a position, said, hey, we're looking for some talent. And I sent her a message. I sent her a DM on LinkedIn and she responded. And we ended up exchanging like our actual contact, our actual numbers. And when I reached out to her, she told me, like, yeah, we're doing some restructuring, so we're not hiring right now. We're going to be hiring a little bit later, but keep in touch with me. So I said, okay. So I started talking to her maybe once or twice a month just to check in, you know. And then over maybe like, I would say it took about 3 months. And I ended up talking to some of her colleagues. I remember talking to some guy in Cali, you know. I was talking to several people that she worked with. And she was like at a director level. And eventually she said, look, you know, we're about to hire her now. I'm going to just go ahead and set you up with a VP. and just, you know, have you talk to him. And I said, okay, cool. So I remember, you know, we set up a day and time. I remember leaving LabCorp or meeting at LabCorp, going into my car, and I took this call, and it was the VP. He said, hey, Lance, I heard you've been persistent, and I'm looking over your resume, and you seem like somebody we could bring on. So I'm going to go ahead and start the process. And, you know, everything he said came true. The next day, some guy called me. Ironically, his name was Lance, too. That's cool. And he said, hey, you know, so he went through the motions. And then I ended up getting a job and an offer, and it was like $30,000 more than what I was getting. Hey. It was like $30,000 more than what I was getting at LabCorp. So, I mean, that's my story. Like, I just went on LinkedIn, you know, created some rapport with some people, you know, told them about my experience, how I moved up at LabCorp. And then it just, everything just lined up. And, you know, I never even met some of these people in person. And it's just funny how, like, I just went through LinkedIn, ended up getting a job paying $30,000 more than what I was previously getting. I never even had your formal, like, you know, face-to-face interview. It was all, like, over the phone and through LinkedIn conversations.
That's pretty cool. So when you say you were speaking to some of her colleagues, was that through LinkedIn as well? You were just messaging people?
Well, my initial contact was with her through LinkedIn. But remember, I said we exchanged like actual contacts. So I messaged her on LinkedIn. We had a little back and forth. Then she said, okay, just take my cell number. So I was like, all right. So I had it locked in my cell. And then from there, my main mode of communication with her was through cell phone. But the way I met her was through LinkedIn. And then there were times where she said, I'm going to have this other guy call you. He's one of my colleagues. I want him to talk to you. So it was just through phone. And then the VP, he called me. He just called my phone.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. She knew that. She was like, yeah, we're gonna work together, but not sure where yet. So it was just a timing thing.
Just timing. Okay. Yep. So I just... you know, I was just kind of keeping it to myself, and then eventually it worked out, man. And then, you know, I put in my notice, and then I ended up working for Optum, and they were a consulting company. And ironically, they signed a deal with LabCorp's competitor. So I literally ended up getting a job with Optum, but serving as a consultant, supporting LabCorp's biggest competitor. So that was unique. And I think,
that's crazy.
I'm going to be honest, I feel like by me talking to them, it kind of gave them the idea to go after that client because they had never signed a deal with a lab before. So, you know, I feel like I helped them with a little business development. But I was so naive back then. I was just so happy that I got a job. But, you know, I think it's safe to say I kind of gave them a little idea because that's what they did. They looked for prospective clients. They were part of the growth team.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they were part of the growth team. They were the ones that kind of went after different clients to work with. And like I said, it was a course of 3 months while I was talking with them. And I was like one of the first consultants on that engagement with that client. So I think it's safe to say that I played a part in that. I don't know what percentage you want to put on it, but I think I opened their eyes and they said, okay, let's go after this client. There may be some opportunity in the lab space, which was great for me because it gave me an opportunity to be a consultant or learn how to be a consultant. But I was in an environment that I was comfortable with, you know, because I was working for, you know, a competitor. So they did a lot of the same things that my previous company did. And there were some cases where I'm like, okay, I've already fixed this before when I worked at LabCorp. So I know what to do to get resolved.
Did you know that, you said it gave you opportunity to be a consultant. Did you know that that's what you were doing at the time?
That's what the role was called, a revenue cycle consultant. So I started doing some research on what a consultant is, because that is kind of a ambiguous term. You know, if you ever talk to any consultant, you know, and ask them what they do, you know, it could vary. I was still kind of naive, but I did research to kind of get a feel for what I would be doing. But at the end of the day, I knew what environment I was going to be in. You know, it was kind of similar to LabCorp because I had to travel to the site, and it was similar. Like they had a business office with a lot of people that did billing, work denials, you know, all of that type of stuff, cash posting. So it was a similar environment, but just the way that they go about things was a little bit different, very structured, a lot of PowerPoint presentations, a lot of Excel work. so, you know, I had to step my game up on many levels, but the actual environment, you know, I kind of knew how to navigate it.
That's what's up. You know, you seem like somebody who just knows what they're doing during a job interview.
Yeah, that's one skill. That may be the cheat code. I feel like I've definitely polished up my interviewing skills. And then, you know, just fast forward, I'm at a level now where I have interviews now where they give you a case study, where in order to, you know, in the interview process involves a case study where they give you a scenario, like a fake scenario, and you have to kind of make a presentation, you know, basically demonstrating, you know, what you would do in that situation. Like I've evaluated case studies, but at some of these consulting jobs, they'll do case studies. They'll give you a scenario and they'll ask you, how would you go about fixing this? And you have to create a presentation, and then you have to present that on the interview, and you go through your slides, right? And it's not a guarantee you get a job, but when you get paid a certain level, you gotta jump certain hurdles, right? So I've done case studies where I put together PowerPoint presentations and I have to present it to them. And then they make a judgment on that. That's part of their assessment on whether or not to hire you. So that's something that's kind of unique. I'm not sure how many industries have that, but in consulting, that's something that I've had to do a few times.
Yeah. Is there anything that you do during, whether it's in the case studies or in an interview, that's like a go-to thing for you, something you always want to bring up or leverage? Or
that's a great question, man. I think I like to be transparent. I think, and this has kind of been risky, but it's worked for me. Because I think when people have interviews, you're always trying to sell yourself. But I like to bring balance to it, you know, hence, you know, my name is a Lance is a root word of balance, right? So I've always think of things with balance. And that's another word I like, is balance. So I always tell them about the great things I've done, but I'm not ashamed to let them know where I may have stumbled, just to bring a level of humility. You know, I don't like, you know, because I've told people on interviews that I came off of PIP just to kind of give them insight, like this guy's going to work. Even if, you know, things don't work out, he's going to figure it out somehow. Right. Mm. So it's kind of risky. I don't advise everybody to do it. But if you do it, you know, pick the right thing that you may. But I just try to be transparent and just let them know, like, hey, you know, I've done some great things. I've excelled. But there have been some times where, you know, I may have stumbled. And I feel like it's helped out, because I feel like people, you know, respect the authenticity. And, you know, but that's something unique that I've done, is I just kind of always divulge things that, you know, may not have worked out for me. But you also kind of use it as a segue to say I was able to be resilient, right? So that's one thing. And then at this point, I kind of have my standard spiel. You know, I basically just give them like my trajectory, the stuff that I'm telling you, some of the stuff I'm telling you. That's pretty much what I tell them on my interview. I just tell them, hey, I started entry level, you know, went on LinkedIn and started making different moves from there.
And that's a pro tip for everyone watching and listening right now, that transparency. I've not heard that advice in a job interview. I've heard be yourself, which I honestly hate that advice, because I'm like, I don't know how, but I like that transparency.
Yeah. Like I said, it's worked for me. And I know and you got to kind of have some heart and just kind of be confident to be like that. Right. Because on the interview, you're really trying to shine. So you really got to have some confidence to let them know, like, yeah, I screwed up, you know, but I made it through.
Okay. So don't just start crying when you say you screwed up and ended it. I screwed up, and hey, now I'm just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, telling that, and that really does tell that story of resilience and pushing through. And y'all, that's definitely the word of the day, Resilience. And I see now why you named your business Resilience Revenue. So can you share a little bit about what this business is and why you started it?
Yeah, so that's really a unique story, and it's definitely one of resilience. So when that happened, I was actually working for an academic medical center. You heard of Wake Forest University, right? So they have there's a hospital in Winston-Salem University. I mean, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Wake Forest Baptist University. Wake Forest Baptist Hospital. So at the Optum, I realized I need to work in the hospital because revenue cycle is really centered around hospital settings, right? I was working for a lab in their revenue cycle, but I started realizing, this revenue cycle management industry is huge in the hospital setting. So I thought that Optum was going to be able to land a deal with Wake Forest. They were actually trying to land a contract with Wake Forest Baptist, but they didn't land it. But I really wanted to get over there. So I found a position that was posted directly with Wake Forest Baptist, and I applied for it and I got hired. And it was a performance improvement advisor role. So I was basically kind of like an internal consultant in their revenue cycle. So I basically worked projects. I work projects for authorizations, like with certain procedures, when you go to the doctor, it has to get authorized. But a lot of times insurances may deny that. Authorizations is a huge problem for hospitals in a revenue cycle. And so I worked some projects for that. So I worked a lot of different projects for different departments of revenue cycle. So I really got exposed to hospital revenue cycle while I was there. But while I was working there, COVID hit. COVID hit us while I was working at Wake Forest Baptist. I was literally working for a hospital when COVID hit. And something I don't think people know, but when COVID hit, a lot of hospitals' revenue tanked. Like, it just went down because elective surgeries is a big revenue generator for hospitals, like elective surgeries. There's a lot of money in that. But when COVID came, a lot of those patients had, we had to take care of the people with COVID, of course, right? And they had a reserve space for COVID patients, and the acuity level, meaning the severity of some of those cases, like basically the COVID cases weren't necessarily as high revenue generating, and they had to, and part of it, they had to stop doing elective surgeries. So hospitals had to stop doing elective surgeries so that they could have bed space, for the COVID patients. But as a result of that, making those decisions and then just maintaining the COVID care, their revenue tank, like the revenue just shot down dramatically. And the organization had to make a decision. And this is my first time dealing with this, but they made a decision to furlough us. And a furlough is like a temporary, you're basically like not working temporarily. So that kind of shocked me because I never dealt with that. So I had to deal with a situation where, and the way they structured it, I do give them credit. Instead of them letting us not be working for a whole month, they said what we'll do is, like, you'll just have to take 1 week off. You'll be unemployed 1 week out of the month for like 4 months. So I took a cut pay wise, for that. But it also gave me a little bit of idle time. So
I'm not mad at that.
I started, so I just had a little bit more time to think about things. And I said, this is crazy. I haven't dealt with this before. But I was still open-minded again. And I said, and then I ran into this guy on LinkedIn from India. And we kind of connected on LinkedIn. And I talked to him, told him my experience. He told me what he does. So in revenue cycle, a lot of companies outsource, like the billing, the coding, the cash posting, the some of those functions, they outsource that to India, right? So there's a big market for outsourcing in India because generally speaking, they may, the wages that they'll work are lower than what, people in the States. So a lot of companies use that strategy to reduce, expenses. And people in India, they're really smart, and they're really, eager to work. So I met him and he told me that he had a group of people, up to 50 people, that know how to do medical billing and coding. So that's when a light bulb came on. I said, okay, let me create an LLC around this, and then me and him can be partners, and I can, sell revenue cycle work independently and utilize him and his people in India, to leverage and scale the operation. So that's really where that came from, is I was kind of taking, things that I learned from the business, and I created my own LLC, so that I, at any given point of time, I could kind of consult with, or I could kind of work with medical practices or hospitals, and create my own contracts. And then if need be, I can tap into these resources in India, through my partner, and we can handle work for a certain facility. So that's kind of where it came from. It spawned from just being in a pandemic, being furloughed, just having like a week every month to just have nothing to do. But still, I was still in revenue cycle. So I just met the right person. And me and him, we still partner, we still talk. And it's kind of slow, but I just keep the LLC active. Because I mean, there's always going to be opportunity. So and that's something I really got. That's the next iteration of Lance, is just really trying to land like a independent deal with a client somewhere. Because I'm at this point now where I made it all the way to the epitome. I've made it to being a consultant, right? Where I interface with CFOs, CEOs of hospitals. So why not be able to do it on my own as
Yeah,
well, right?
that's cool. So what does that ideal client look like for you?
It could be any, at this point, being that I'm kind of more in a startup phase, I could just adopt an independent physician. If there's a doctor's office that needs a little bit more, they need some assistance with increasing their cash flow, through their revenue cycle, that's probably the best client for me, is like a smaller medical practice, that just needs a little bit of help with improving their cash flow. I could help out with denials. So at this point, like a smaller client, a smaller practice, any specialty, I could come in and figure it out. I'm well versed in many different, what they call EMRs. So the healthcare platforms that they bill their claims out in, and a lot of times it's connected to the clinical side too. So I don't know if you heard of Epic, but Epic is one of the biggest electronic medical record services. Like if you ever go to the hospital, most hospitals are on the Epic system. When I worked at Wake Forest, they were on Epic. Cerner is another platform. Athena. So I've worked throughout my career. I've worked at so many different companies where I've been exposed to so many different healthcare information system platforms, if you will. So that's another thing that I can kind of market in our in the area. Like basically any doctor's office out there, I've probably been exposed to their, whatever system they're using. So I could come in, I could probably do a little technical work. I could do some, financial analyses. I could help out with some change management. So I feel like at this point I have a lot of different services I could offer. And that's one thing I worked my partner in India. That was my first thing. I also, because you could probably go to somebody, a web developer, they could probably charge $500 to $1,000, right? Like this guy was like, we could do it for like 200. So they created my website
That's what's
for
up.
like $200. Some people in India, and they knew exactly what I was trying to, market. So they knew how to help, mold the content for me. So, I keep the LLC active, and I've done some freelance work through Upwork. I'm not sure if you've heard of Upwork.
Yeah, no Upwork.
But there are certain platforms where you could bid for work. So I've done that. I did that, for I've gotten some jobs through that. Like where somebody may need help with revenue cycle, so I bid for that job, and then on a few occasions people selected me, and I just did a little bit of work, and they were able to pay me through the platform. So I was able to kind of, log that through my
Nice.
LLC. So, but my vision is to try to grow and get like more of a bigger contract with like a medical practice. And it'd be more like long term, maybe like a 3 month engagement where I come in, do a little bit of work to help them out, and get paid gotcha. Like that.
That's pretty cool. Big or small, you're basically helping these healthcare companies find the money, huh?
Exactly, because I mean, like you mentioned, like a lot of people don't know about it, but there's a lot of people that work in the industry, but it's not something that you necessarily in your mm-hmm. traditional model go to college for. It's just something you just have to kind of get that experience.
You see
experience.
A lot of black people in this field doing what you do?
Not necessarily. I mean, of course, there are definitely black people in this, but I would say as I've moved up and made certain, and it's kind of interesting because it seems like certain companies have a different demographic mix. Mm. I will say, like, since I got into consulting, not as many. It's not as many black men or black people that get to a certain level in consulting.
That's interesting. I feel like we, just as, you know, culture, community, don't always know about all these different fields. Like, everyone, when thinking about healthcare, you automatically think of, like, getting your CNA or going into, like, being some type of healthcare provider versus getting on the other side of it and just growing in that, what you call it, revenue cycle management. Yeah. Okay. See, I'm learning. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. So I might pivot.
You got
I might
it.
Leave
you
this podcast world behind. Join you. I'll be the second guy.
Hey, I was thinking about that. You might help. I wanted, cause I always wanted to do a revenue cycle management podcast. There's actually a young lady. She randomly reached out to me on Instagram. I guess when I put that resilient revenue link, somehow she found it. And I think her company's like Gateway Healthcare Solutions, but me and her talked. And she wanted me to do a podcast with her on revenue cycle management. It never worked out. Or, you know, I might still be able to follow up with her, but she had me. She was the one that kind of made me think, like, wow, I might could do podcasts on this.
I think it's smart. You know, like I was actually a few months ago, I helped this project management company in Greenville, South Carolina, get their podcast started. I was just helping them with like kind of the ideation, getting the tools together, how they could go about recording and stuff. And I think they're about to launch in January, so I'm going to follow up with them soon. But their whole thing was using it for thought leadership, making sure that people knew that they were an option and what it was. So, yeah, no, I got you.
This actually may be I might want to do this, man. I think I'm starting to think this may be, I may want to be. Because I feel like I've got the credibility.
Well, you definitely
now,
do.
Right? I've worked for your major companies from LabCorp, Optum, yeah. Atrium, Wake Forest.
You got
Coast,
all
Baptist,
the letters
R1,
next
RCM,
to your name,
Buron,
too. Like on your, I say, you like say on your LinkedIn thing, you got all the letters next to your name of every single credential certification there is, it seems like. So.
Yep. Yeah, that's one thing. Because I was looking over some of your content, and I saw one clip where you mentioned, career advancement, mm-hmm. One step is to get certification. So I got certifications. And then, my last credential was an MBA with the concentration in healthcare mm-hmm. management. So I have the prerequisites. I got a Lean Six Sigma black belt. That's a business methodology that involves statistics and, process improvement. I got that while I was at LabCorp. I got a certified revenue cycle representative credential to pretty much demonstrate that I know revenue cycle. And then I got that MBA in healthcare management, as the icing on the cake. And then on top of that, I've survived that many organizations, like large organizations, as well as an actual hospital. And ironically, I worked there during COVID. So, I feel like I got the great resume.
You're already a storyteller too.
But it hasn't been easy though. I've had lots of ups and downs, but like I said, my overarching theme is resilience and just keep moving. And now I'm kind of thinking what's next, but you've got me thinking that maybe doing a podcast, because I feel like more people need to know, because I've helped. This is another thing I want to bring up too, because it's not all about me, but every time that I get a promotion, I try to bring somebody else up. So when I left LabCorp to go to Optum, I referred at least 3 people, because there was a point when I was getting like extra $500 in my check. I'm like, what's this?
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that's right. The referral program. The person that I referred is on their 90th day. Oh, and the money came through. So I referred some people. Some of them are still working at Optum. So I found pride in like bringing people on. And And when I worked at everywhere I've been able to refer someone. When I went to Atrium, I referred a lady that worked, and she was able to make a huge jump salary wise. And then she ended up leaving there and going somewhere else and even making a bigger jump. So it's just beautiful being able to say that I help people out. And then I went to a company called R1. I was able to take a lady that worked with me at Wake Forest and she got her a job at R1. And I'm pretty sure she got an increase in pay. So that's one thing, too, because I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, maybe some of that good karma will come back. Like whenever I get a promotion, I try to, you know, find a way to reach back out to somebody and help them out. So that's just one thing that, you know, I like to do and I'll continue to do is just help other people excel in their careers based on some of the moves I'm making.
Okay, so talk about, you know, supporting people in their careers. This whole show, part of why I started is because when I first graduated, I felt very discouraged about my career. And I ended up leaning on people who were in my community who could kind of help me figure out how to navigate this early stage in my advice. Actually, one person, shout out to Ryan Shaw, is met through LinkedIn. He was an alumni of my school. But what is one piece of advice or something you like to say to somebody who, you know, a Black professional out there feeling discouraged about their career journey, what they should do, just feeling lost, like what's one thing that you would share with them?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is just to kind of, you know, really zone in on what you want to do. Zone in on an industry and even a company, right? Like, you know, just looking back at what I've mentioned, like I wasn't just sending resumes out to all of these different companies. I was, you know, I was kind of honing in. I try to hone in on a certain industry, first of all, of course, and then a certain company and research company. Like I do a lot of research on companies. So just doing your research, first of all, it starts with you. You have to understand, you know, what am I interested in? Understand what have I done already that I could leverage into the next step. So understand what you want to do. And then once you determine that, you need to kind of just hone in on the industry or the, you know, a small set of companies, right? You don't want to stretch yourself thin. You really want to devote your attention to a set of companies and exert your energy there. And I feel like that will kind of help you land something rather than just, you know, throwing your eggs in all of these different baskets, hoping something happens. You want to narrow down your scope to something that's more reasonable. I think that's my advice.
That's fine. I like that. I like that, especially because, I've been in the position where I was just throwing my resume at every single job listing I could find. I was like, I could probably do that. And it was exhausting. It was depressing, too. It was depressing.
I was about to say, yeah, because it does impact your mental. Like, when you do, because I've tried it, but I was like, man, this, I need to focus on the right one, right? You know? It's kind of like dating a little bit.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, you could be out here doing it, but you got to, you know, sometimes you just got to focus on one, right? And then work zone there, in. You know, and see what, you know, focus on the right one.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Yo, the next podcast we do will be the dating one. Yo.
Oh, man.
Hey, we're talking about growing pains. Growing pains. All right. So, Lance, what's the best way for everyone to follow you?
That's a good question. Freelance420 on Instagram. Lance Gaynor, Facebook. Those are probably, and then LinkedIn, I'm under Lance Gaynor. So those are the three platforms that I'm usually on. Business wise, anything career related, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn under Lance Gaynor, last name Gainer, same as Walter's last name. Yep. So, LinkedIn, Lance Gaynor, same on Facebook and then Instagram. My handle is freelance420. 420 is my birthday. if you listen to this interview, you kind of, the freelance is just a play on words. Again, I got a degree in English. So, and it's kind of derivative of what Sir Lancelot back in the days, you know, certain knights would, you know, work for different kings. So you look at my career, you know, I haven't necessarily been loyal to just one company. I moved around. So I consider myself freelance in the business world a little bit too.
You know what's cool about that? And then he actually inspired another question. The freelance, like, you know, there's freelancers. See out here, like, as a, you know, freelancer too. That's cool.
Yep. Yeah, that's another thing, because that's where I position myself with the resilient revenue. You know, technically, I could be a freelancer. I could do some freelance work, you know, through that LLC. I mean, I've done that. Like, I went on, I think the app is called Freelancer. I think the app, one of the apps that I got some work on was called Freelancer.
I haven't done the Freelancer one.
Yeah, I think they may have renamed it, but yep, okay. Freelancer. So it's funny. So yeah, that was kind of my vision. You know, so I think I'm a well-rounded guy. Like, even looking at my college career, right? I was football team, ROTC. I was dealing with so many different types of people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm freelance. I'm a freelance mind.
Poetry class and all that too. Yeah.
Yeah, like I took a couple courses at UNCG because they were offering at A&T at the time. I took some courses at Winston-Salem State. So I just try to be, you know, well-rounded, and it leads to me being open-minded. I'm not a big judgmental guy, because I feel like, you know, everybody's just living this experience, man, trying to make the most out of it, man. We got to give each other grace. But I'm an open-minded guy, you know, and, you know, it's led me to kind of make some moves, just being about being open-minded and not just, you know, being so, you know, restricted in my thinking. Mm-hmm.
I like that. So you feel like, I feel like there's a pressure to remain at an organization. I think part of this is just like, you know, that's just the way life was back in the day. You find a company, you work there till you retire. And it's not the same way now, but there's still this pressure, this almost like expected or anticipated loyalty type of thing that you want you to feel.
Yeah. I like that you brought that up, because I have to explain that sometimes in interviews, and I've created like my own spiel and how to kind of, you know, temper that expectation or temper that mindset. Because you think about it, right? Like, yeah, back in the day, you know, parents, you know, they worked at a company for a long time, right? That's not necessarily the case right now. And the example that I use that makes a lot of people that interview me, they like, you're right. I said, look, think about it. A lot of companies don't even stay themselves after several years. There's so many mergers and acquisitions occurring. You know, like, even if you stayed at a company now, at some point you're going to change your email signature. You know, your email is going to change because they're going to merge with another company. It's case in point, when I worked at Wake Forest Baptist, before I left, they merged with Atrium. So by the time I left, we were having to change the email, you know, the whole signs change. Like, you know, so if you think about it like that, like, the world that we live in, that it's ever evolving. So the idea of you sticking with a company, even if you technically stay, you're not really at the same company, because they're going to merge with some other company. There's going to be new leadership. The culture may change a little bit. So that notion of staying with one company, that doesn't exist to me anymore, because the way that the business world is, even your large companies, you know, that, you know, your name brand companies, they're merging with some other company, right? There's always some big merger. And there's always going to be some change in culture, some change in leadership. You know, there's always going to be some disruption. So my career, I said, look, I'm going to be in control myself, instead of, you know, me stay with this company. They get bought out by another company. Then there's some type of riff or reduction in force, because they realize that they have to reduce force, they reduce expenses. I'm going to be the controller of my own destiny. You know, I'm going to be the one that's going to make the move before, you know, they hit you with something and say, hey, yeah, we had to do a reduction in force because of this merger. We have to scale down the operation. You know, I'm going to make that decision and determine who I want to partner with. I look at, you know, you could work a 9-to-5, and you could be an entrepreneur, but either one, I feel like you're your own CEO. Mm. Even if you work a 9-to-5, you're your own CEO, right? I've been working 9-to-5s, but I feel like I'm my own CEO. I determine, okay, what's next? Or, okay, this company, all right, I think I've gotten what I want. now want to go somewhere else to get another experience and grow a little bit more somewhere else.
That's
right. And get a little bit more money.
You know what? That was a really good quote. Well, this whole thing, this whole conversation has been a lot of great gems, a lot of great takeaways that I think is just going to be very applicable for someone looking to get into the same industry or even just outside of it. Like, I think that's the cool thing about these, just speaking to people like yourself who've lived, survived, gone through it, learned from the, you know, regrettable decisions, the decisions that were just tough ones but had to be made. A lot of great stories there. So thank you for your time. Is there anything else you want to say before we head out for the day?
Nah, just stay resilient and think outside the box and just know that you're your own CEO. Even if you work a 9-to-5, you're your own CEO. You could be in control of your own destiny. So just stay up. But yeah, definitely, man, it's been great being a part of this podcast. This is something I probably want to, you know, I want to pick your brain in the future on, you know, maybe how to do this more, because I really want to share more stories. I want to help people out in careers, and I want more people to know about revenue cycle, because even a nurse, you know, I've realized that you could be a nurse and, you know, everybody thinks a nurse is always in a patient facing role, but there are companies that will pay a nurse just to write appeals for insurance denials and get paid a little bit. I helped the lady realize that I could get a job just writing appeals, you know, because of her clinical knowledge. So I just want to kind of just do a podcast and get some information out there for people that, you know, maybe, you know, wanting to look into this industry, revenue cycle management.
Yeah, we're going to make that happen. Matter of fact, I have an idea on how to roll it out too, actually. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, this is perfect. Perfect collaboration, absolutely, man. Because it's been on my mind. I've been wanting to get into podcasts and tap into the content creation. I just haven't, you know, been able to do it. But I know you're the expert on that. So let's partner up and, you know, help me launch something.
Definitely got to, for a couple of reasons. One, we're saying this while the recording's happening. So everyone out here, if you're listening and watching, if you don't see any podcasts from Lance, hit me up. Accountability, harass me, bully me till it happens. And also, I can't come to the family cookouts unless I'm helping you out too. So it's like, they could be like, "Yo, where's that podcast you were last supposed to do?" I'm like, "Oh, it's coming, my man." So yeah, this happening. Got the people around the world, the people back.
Yeah,
home.
The family's gonna be.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, everyone listening, let me know what your takeaways are. Drop them in the comments. Make sure you hit in Lance up, Freelance 420, Lance Gainer on all the other platforms. DM him. He said he's got answers for if you got questions or at least a story. So either way, you're going to walk away with something. The Working Well Black Show. Appreciate y'all. Peace.